Greetings from the Candy Colored Studio, where life is sweeter in candy color. I'm oil painter Katrina Berg, and I'm so glad you're here. I'll be chatting with you from my Midway, Utah home, serving up a palette of support, hope, and love with a side of realness. As a mother of five, including five-year-old twins, I know too well that life is rarely easy and jolly, but savoring the sweet moments gives us the strength we need to find peace, growth, and fulfillment along our journey. Again, so happy you're here and welcome.
I'm getting on a podcast, so don't make noise.
As a foreword of sorts, I just want to give you a heads up that at the end of today's very unique episode, Melody Nui Johnson, who I interview, she goes ahead and talks about a very special project that she worked on, all about riding on the front runner from Provo to Salt Lake every day while she was working as a nurse. And so if you want to listen to that, it's 2 extra minutes. It's at the end of the episode. The other thing that I wanted to give you a heads up on is that while I absolutely love mythology and was obsessed with it in junior high and high school, I have not read it for so long. So when we were talking about the sirens and singing a sweeter song, you'll realize that I mixed up Oedipus and Ulysses' name. But aside from that, I'm so excited for this interview, for you to listen. Again, it's very unique. Melody actually reads right out of her collection during the episode. It's going to be such a treat. So enjoy.
Welcome back to the Candy Colored Studio. Today is a beautiful day in Midway. We have red all over the mountains. We still have some smoke, but I'm telling you, there's hope for fall. And in part of that hope, somebody that's bringing me, that has been bringing me a lot of hope recently is my dear friend, Melody Nui Johnson. She and I first met at Art and Soup a couple of years ago, and what fun it was to realize that we were soon going to be neighbors because she and her husband, Jeff, are going to build a home here in Midway. I remember connecting with her at that show. She was telling me about her daughter and how she loved to sew and all these amazing things that she could do with her sewing machine. And I remember we just had this wonderful connection in between meeting with hundreds of people that weekend. And yet it was such a good connection. And then since then we've stayed in touch and I've got to know her and her family through Instagram. She got to come to the studio one day and we had such a beautiful chat about this poetry collection that we're going to be talking about today, and in perfect roundness. We also had a deep chat about so many other things. We talked about a painting to celebrate this collection, lots of really special things. And then not too long after that, one memorable morning, I received the loveliest rainy day photos from Paris as she and her husband Jeff were visiting. And as I was reading through this beautiful, beautiful collection, there was one particular poem that I felt like just exhibited that moment that she was describing to me while they were together in Paris. And that may not have been the intention, but as I read it, I couldn't help but think about that really sweet time that they had together. So I am just really excited for you to have some time to get to know Melody and to hear about her journey and about this gorgeous collection that honestly is just so perfect in timing. It couldn't be better. Every time Melody and I talked about it, I'm like, this is just so needed. We need this. And it just couldn't be better. So Melody, welcome. We're just so happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I love your podcast. I love your art, as you know, and I love the paintings that I own that you did for us. So thank you.
Well, I'm so glad. Well, let's just dive right in. Why don't you give us a little bit of background about yourself, your family, anything you want to share, just to give us a little foundation on who you are.
So I was born in the East Coast, but raised primarily in school years here in Utah. And so I kind of think of myself as a Utah native. And I married young, relatively young, and had 3 children, divorced after 10 years, and then spent about 20 years as a single mother. And then married 5 years ago this month, but prior to that was reunited with a friend from my childhood who I adore and who we immediately became fast friends again and realized we're just perfect life partners. So we've been married for about 5 years. We each had 3 adult children, and now we have a gaggle of grandchildren as well. So it's a good life.
It is a good life. And it's been really special for me to watch because you guys still consider yourself newlyweds in some way. And I think that this is kind of funny, but sometimes when you share things, it's the newlywed honeymoon stage that I never had.
Yeah.
And so I have just been like, just relishing in your joy. And it's been really, really sweet to celebrate you and Jeff. And I love to see you guys together. It's absolutely wonderful. So, let's jump into your journey. Let's talk about, so for those of you that are meeting Melody for the first time, she's a mother. She is a brave mother because she was a single mother for, you said, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. And then she's also a nurse. And so she, you know, not only is she a poet and a writer, but she's also a nurse. So we want to hear about your journey. Want to hear about being a nurse, being a mother, being a poet, anything that you want to share with training and schooling and also just your journey in general.
So, you know, I have begun to believe that our stories are all quite similar. I think as human beings and as women in particular, there's a very common thread that runs throughout our life stories, which is we do have a lot of things we love and that we want, and we also have a lot of demands as women. We live in a culture that has certain expectations of women. I mean, maybe the whole world is this way, that really involve nurturing, caregiving, child rearing, being primarily responsible for that culturally, historically. So, what I want to say about the overall feeling of my journey, even from childhood to where I am now looking back, is that it is a difficult road. I think it's hard to be a woman in the world. I'm not minimizing how hard it is to be a man with the demands of that a traditional male role would set for a man. But I think it's particularly difficult to be a woman. So the journey overall has been very hard, but it's also been very rewarding. And the older we get, one of the secrets that is impossible to explain is really the better things get. Even though physiologically things get a little more complicated as we age, because our bodies and our cells are heading in a different direction than we might like, there's a great amount of satisfaction and reward just looking back at how hard the journey is. So on this end, I think I've had a wonderful life. Going through it, I did not have an easy life. So I'll just try and hit a few points along the way. So number one, I have been told from the time I can remember that I was a very early walker and an early talker. My mother talked about how I was speaking in complete sentences by the time I was a year. And as a young child, I remember discovering that the shapes that people draw on the page that we know as letters, these little symbols, had sounds. And those sounds could be combined. Those symbols could be combined to make something called words. And then the words could be combined to make phrases and sentences that could open up all kinds of wonder and all kinds of amazing magic if you could figure out these codes that were hidden within these symbols. And even as a small child, I thought this is the key to life. Words are the key to freedom and to beauty. And so I fell in love with words very early in my life. As soon as I learned to read, I just remember thinking, this is magic. This is all magic. So that was, I feel like, a central element of who I was. As I grew up, well, I wrote my first poem in second grade, And looking back on it, it was a lovely poem, and it had understanding of rhythm, of rhyme, and even indirect rhyme. I didn't write poetry growing up as a child beyond that. When I was a very young child, a few poems came out. In high school, I was involved in student government in the capacity of the assembly chairman. So I really enjoyed writing scripts for assemblies and some performance art and things like that. And I've always been very connected with art. I've felt like all forms of art, whether it's visual art, music, performance art, that it's really essential for happiness in the world. So, but when I was approaching graduation, and even before then, my love of science kind of erupted in a way that moved me toward, you know, microbiology, biology, and if I had been a little bolder and had been raised in a different environment, I may have become a physician or a scientist. So I have a natural love of science, and nursing was a good option because there were many different fields within nursing where I could go. It was something that I felt was readily obtainable. And I weighed English literature and nursing and chose nursing.
Yeah.
And I have at times regretted it, but again, here I am in my 50s looking back and realizing that nursing provided a very nice income for me as a single parent. I am not entirely certain that English literature, even if I had gone into education, or most artists don't earn a living through their art, okay?
Right, it's true.
You know this? Some of us can, and that's wonderful. But for most of us, art is something that we must do because it's part of us.
Yeah.
But it may not be the thing that supports our family financially.
Especially when you're the only one supporting your family.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was the right choice for me. It ended up being the right choice for me. But all along the way, I would feel like, why didn't I go into, you know, literature? Because I love it so much. Right. I will say that there is room for both, and sometimes that room happens over time, not necessarily all simultaneously. Uh-huh. Because I am writing way more now than I ever have before. And part of that is because there is a second income, and my attention isn't drawn to child rearing because my children are raised. So, and I'm doing a lot of, I had considered going back to school and getting another degree in writing, but I realized I just don't really want to go back to school. And I don't have to. And so I attend writing workshops. I even created and have hosted writing workshops for women in my community. And so I have this lovely career as a nurse and the many beautiful things that has brought to my life. And I've been able to write in some form pretty much all along the way.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Yeah. I think that's really empowering too, because honestly, you look at your journey and it does look like it was, things worked out the way they were meant to. I think it would be a lot harder for you to have gone to school to be a writer and then realized, oh, I need to support my family. And you can write without going to school, but you really can't be a nurse without going to school. You can't be in the medical school without going to school. And so it's amazing how these things work out for our good. And I can't imagine that your kids the things that they learn from watching you still continue to write and to make that a part of your life, and to be able to also pursue your love and your passion with science. What a gift it is for them to realize that it's okay to have our right and our left brain so fed as a mother and as a caregiver and as a primary responsibility for all of them. And what a gift it is that you gave that to your children. And I see, in particular, your daughter that I follow on Instagram, she has taken all those things that she watched you do, and she has been able to develop her gifts as a mother and an entrepreneur and a creator, mostly because of the environment that you probably, you know, that you provided for her. And you said, this is a way that you can do it. And I think a lot of creatives that I know didn't get to have that. And so what a gift it is that you gave that perspective to her, you know?
Thank you. So, that's a lovely thing to say.
We've been talking a little bit about how all these things interact and intersect. Do you want to talk about how they've influenced you and your family, or anything else that you want to share about that?
Sure. As you were talking, I remember, so I did create a little bit of a ritual when my children were younger. They knew that when I was writing, or when an idea came to me, it was really important that I get it down on paper. Yeah. so that at least the idea was captured in the moment. Because as a writer, and this may be true also as a visual artist, there are certain things that if you don't capture them in the moment, they're gone. Yes. You know, I don't know if you've read Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, but it's a wonderful book. I would say anyone who is creative at all should read it, and even if you're not. And there's a wonderful concept in this book that talks about ideas as entities, living entities, that are in the universe around us. And the muse brings them to us. And it may bring them to us for a few moments or a few days. And if we don't take that and create something from it, it will move on.
Right.
And it will, I don't know where it goes, but it sometimes it will go to someone else, and they will answer the call of this idea that's living in the universe waiting for an expression through a human being. And so my children knew, they would walk into a room and I would be sitting down with I usually wrote in these just little composition books, is what I did for many years. And I would say, I'm writing, so I need about 10 or 15 minutes. And they would leave me alone because I created this tiny space, this tiny moment, and I communicated to them, this idea needs my time. I love you. I will care for you, but I have to attend to this idea because in the moment it's urgent, it's going to leave. So, yes. So you can have a professional life in whatever career you want. And people know this, women understand that if we don't make time for the creative part of ourselves, nobody's going to grant that to us. You know, no entity or person is going to say, here, let me create a little studio in the backyard for you so that you can go there and have time. If you want it, you have to do it for yourself. And so I did it in ways that met the need at the time. And then as far as my nursing career and my writing, there's a very interesting thread that is similar and essential in both writing and nursing. And it has to do with attention and observation. So when I meet a person for the first time, I intuitively and instinctively, I don't even think about it, I'm doing a head-to-toe assessment of them, a nursing assessment. I'm looking at skin color. I'm looking at their pupils. I'm looking at whether their shoulders are relaxed. I'm looking at the rate of breathing. So like when you and I met that first day, I was probably thinking this about you, you know, how are the cheeks pink enough? Does someone look healthy? Like I can identify a dialysis patient from, 20 yards away. So there is something about observation mm-hmm. to certain details that are specific to my role as a nurse.
Yeah.
And I think most healthcare professionals, this happens to them over time. You just do it automatically because it's essential to your role as a professional. As an artist or as a writer, observation is also very important
yes.
because observing certain details that are essential to the work of writing is kind of unique. Not everyone is going to notice as they're walking down the street the ladybug or the small trail of ants across the rock on the trail in the mountains. Some people will walk right past that and not even see it. But I think writers and artists as a group, and interestingly, I think children also, have a tendency to notice certain details that sometimes pass others by. So that thread of attention and observation connects nursing and writing and has felt like has served me in both settings.
For sure. Yeah, no, I love that. I'm so glad that you brought that up. It's interesting because I love to go on hikes, but I always want to take my kids on hikes, but they don't like the word hike. And I'm like, I'm not really a hiker. I just like to walk and I like to be slowly look at things. And so I think, well, let's just go on a walk. Let's go. Because I go with my cute girlfriends and they're like billy goats, just storming up the mountain and they're amazing. They're machines. And I finally realized that's not my style and it's okay. Number one, I can't keep up with them and they're long, beautiful legs. But number two, like when I get out, I'm like you say, I want to observe everything. I want to take it in. I want to glean from it. And that's better for my health and for my soul than for me quickly going up the mountain where I know that there's some people that is good for their soul. And I just had to realize that it's okay. Like we don't need to all enjoy it the same way. But I'm really glad that you said that because it's true. And I was talking to a friend this last week and she was sharing, she actually, her daughter passed away earlier this year and her daughter had some very severe health challenges. And she realized that when her daughter passed, that she was now noticing the butterfly. She and her daughter were now both noticing the butterfly. And she was also seeing the world through her daughter's eyes. And I'm sure her daughter was always noticing these things. She was she just couldn't verbally communicate. But now her mom, that she wasn't so worried about every moment with her daughter, trying to help her with everything that she needed, she could see the beauty. And I thought that was really interesting too. So I think, I think it's wonderful. I love that when you meet people, that you do this assessment. How can you not? Because you've been trained. It's just part of breathing, right?
Yeah.
But
and I hope I didn't reveal a secret that's going to make anybody feel uncomfortable with their nurse or physician friend, but it's just, you can't help it. Over time, it's just what you do.
Well, and I think that deep down we want them to, because how many times do you go to an appointment and you say that was too quick? They couldn't have possibly... they didn't tell me anything, but maybe they didn't tell you, but they assessed everything in their mind, right? So hopefully it is a secret that gives us all a little bit of peace that they may not tell you everything that's going on in their mind, but they have definitely assessed you.
Yes.
It's
no news is good news.
If right? No news is
comment
good.
On, then
yeah,
you're not going to hear about it.
Yeah. And I think that too, you're asking our body those questions. You may not be asking us, but you're asking our body. Okay. Let me look at all these things. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about, you shared an interesting part of your journey with me just a second before we started recording. And you talked about how the poetry really came into full force. And when you kind of dove it, do you want to go ahead and talk about
sure.
that?
Sure. And this is, I haven't shared this before really. And probably because it is a point of vulnerability, and it surprised me actually, Katrina, when I realized with people I've spoken to before or blog posts that I've done or others have done on behalf of this book or at other times with my writing, I'd never really talked about the impetus for when I began writing poetry in earnest. And it just struck me this morning that when it really started for me as an adult was at a crisis in my life. And that was when I began dealing with childhood trauma. And I spontaneously started writing poetry. In fact, one morning I woke up with these, and the way my process worked was I had a lot of emotional, what you might call flashbacks that were connecting me to experiences that I couldn't name and were too vague to really understand fully. Sure. But as these feelings started coming up, a poem just sprang out of me. And I thought, it's beautiful. And it's telling me something. And so again, when I opened up to the trauma and the pain, I opened a door to the creative part of myself that had been suppressed along with all those traumas and that pain. And so there's something to be said for opening up to the parts of yourself that are painful or that might feel dark, because especially with childhood trauma, when you repress or suppress things, you can't help but suppress. You can't suppress one portion of yourself and not lose another portion of yourself. You know, we can't just take this thing that was terrible and terrifying or these things and set them aside and not lose a piece of ourselves as we set them aside. And for me, it was partly my essential self and my creative self. So when I opened up to the trauma and began, I actually got into therapy and I opened this door to creative resources that had been dampened for many, many years. So as I said, I wrote some poetry as a young child, but during my growing up years throughout middle school, high school, and even into early adulthood, I wasn't really writing poetry. But once I opened to really dealing with the trauma, here it came. And so my first poems were related to that. I did a lot of what we would call inner child work through poetry, because I was trying to express childhood experiences that a child wouldn't really have words for in adult language, and also in a way that was bearable, either for myself to write or for someone who might potentially read it. And so that was the door to my greatest creative potential, which was surprising because I had always loved art. It had always been important to me. Words were always important to me. I had read voraciously as a child, but my ability to bring my own words out was connected to my silencing of the truth of what had happened to me as a child. Does this make sense?
Totally. It makes so much sense because, you know, I've experienced it in a similar way with my art. And when I started to paint and when I started drawing on a regular basis, I realized that it was like a balm. It was that balm that I needed, and I didn't know why I needed it, you know? Mm-hmm. And as I went along and I kept creating and doing things, I realized I needed it to be able to sustain me throughout motherhood and all the things going on with life. And then later bits and pieces would flash back just like you described. And I felt like yours, it seemed like it was this almost like a vacuum that was opened and it just formed into your life.
Yes.
When you needed it and you needed to deal with it right then. And for me, I think my little soul knew that it just could only share so much at a time. And that's interesting how we all face trauma in a different way. And I say face, like Carl and I were talking about this last night, and how a lot of times to heal, we have to face those things, right? And yet we all need to do it in different ways, and just because we've experienced different things. But I really believe in something that you talked about in the beginning about how we have to give up a part of ourselves to kind of to change and become and to progress. And it's interesting that your soul had to give up that trauma so that you could become your best self and that you could continue to grow and to use that gift that was totally suppressed, completely yeah. suppressed.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's such, I'm so grateful that you shared, because I know that we have people that are listening today who need to know one more way to help heal. And everybody has hard things in their life. Some of us, it's childhood trauma, some of it's abuse, you know, and all these different things, but we all have different experiences. And so I think it's so important to hear, you know, the ways that we are dealing with these and facing these traumas, because otherwise sometimes there's just not a roadmap to follow. And I don't think that people were really talking about things. You know, my mom and I were talking about it yesterday, and she was apologizing for not helping me. And I said, nobody was helping anyone with this stuff. I don't think anybody was helping your generation or my generation. This is what I said to her. You're kind of in between us, I think, mm-hmm. Melody. Mm-hmm. You're just barely older yeah. than I am. But I think that somewhere between my mom's generation and my generation, I think that it just wasn't happening. And so I think that in a way, we're gatekeepers, Melody, because if we don't share the gates that helped us, how can anyone else get through, right?
That's a beautiful thought. Yes, yes. And there's a huge change between your mother's generation and now,
uh-huh.
really, and my mother's generation. I'm quite convinced my mother was victimized as a child as well, knowing what I know now. And it is a wonderful time to live in, as far as people's willingness to know the truth and to speak these difficult truths, and resources available for help. And I think art, all kinds of arts are profoundly healing. And there are all types of art therapy. I've recently been looking into becoming there's a certification in poetry therapy. And one of the places I work is at a cancer hospital, Huntsman Cancer Hospital. And we have music therapists, and we have an artist and a writer in residence and an artist in residence at the hospital. And these are part of therapeutics for cancer patients.
Yeah.
So art is can be a deeply and profoundly healing avenue for people. And I would say to anyone who has pain of any kind, really, I would strongly suggest, even when it's scary, to start writing about it. And not even with the idea that you need to share it with anyone, but you can express things through writing in the privacy of your own notebook that you can't get out another way. Or if you're a visual artist or a composer, you know, music.
Totally.
There are certain things that simply can't be expressed simply by speaking them.
Yes.
But when you write them, either as poetry or as a narrative, or when you can create an image on a page, you can express certain things that simply can't be spoken. So yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. That anyway, and I'm sorry that any of us have to deal with this.
Oh, me too. I my heart kind of dropped when you first told me, but I thought, of course it happened to Melody too, you know, because again, like you said, our journeys are hard, but we look back and we realize that although these things were done to us, they were absolutely done for us. It made you a better woman, a better mother, a better nurse, a better, you know, poet and friend and wife. And I know that it's made me a better person too. And so it's very easy to say, why is this happening to me? But it's so much more important to say, why is this happening for me? What can I do with this? Who can I serve? Who can I lift? How can I stop this chain in my family? You know, how can I make sure that this never happens to a friend or a neighbor or a child in my life? You know, so I'm grateful. I'm grateful, you know, if it does happen to my kids, at least I know what to do. So I am kind of curious, where are you in your healing journey? Because I keep thinking that I'm doing better and better, and then more things keep coming up and I'm like, oh, we're not done with this yet. You know, there's always another layer. So I am curious, because, you know, like, what, how are things going? Like, how long ago did this vacuum open for you, and where are you at right now?
Well, so you and I kind of share a similar spiritual aesthetic, I think, in a belief in a world beyond this, where we existed as spiritual entities before this incarnation, and that there is a world beyond this even after we pass on. So something happened. So the short answer is, I was 25 when this all started coming up for me.
Yeah.
And this might seem depressing to someone who's 25 or 30 or 40, but in hindsight, again, I am at a place where I have a tremendous amount of peace, and I would say wholeness, and I can live wholeheartedly. This doesn't mean I'm entirely free of symptoms of post-traumatic stress.
Yes.
That there are times when something happens and I'm, you know, and I'm pulled back to some of those feelings again, but that's very rare for me. And I feel very fortunate. However, I had an experience early in my active recovery process where I was very deeply distressed about it. And I was kind of, so I have a habit of prayer and meditation. And at that time, and I just do it anywhere and everywhere. Doing dishes is a wonderful meditative process. And I remember being in my kitchen and having these questions about why and what, you know, how, and how am I going to get through this? And I had this very wonderful and empowering, these words come to me. It's an interesting, they came in the form of words. And that for me, for my individual process, it was like a three-step mission to endure.
Yeah.
To endure what happened. And then to emerge from it.
Yeah.
And then to witness. To witness of it and be a witness to what happens to others. And so I spent about 25 years enduring. That's the way I framed it for myself. So for 25 years, I was in a state of, and it's not like it was horrible every moment. You know, it was for 25 years, I was in a state where I had been abused and or was unaware and or not connecting that part of my life to the rest of my life. So at 25, I woke up. I began to actually confront and deal with the abuse. And then for about 25 years, I was really truly emerging from it, either by doing therapy or by doing art, writing, just growing. You know, we're all going to grow and we're all going to mature. And there are certain things we are going to grow out of whether we work on it or not. If we're enlightened adults on any level, we're going to grow, we're going to mature, we're going to have greater understanding. So that's the next 25 years. And then I figure I have 25 years, another 25 years that I need to be, you know, actively witnessing, meaning being acutely aware of issues that are related to abuse of vulnerable populations.
Yeah.
And that served me as a nurse, as I've, you know, worked in nursing. And it's not like this starts here and ends, and then this starts here and ends, and this starts here and ends. There's lots of overlap, but those three words easily reflect how I see my life journey in relation to this trauma that, yes, indeed shaped me in large part. And so I would say I have long since emerged from it. In fact, it was probably not 25 years that took me time to really emerge and work to the point where I felt like I was free from the major limitations of what had happened in my formative years. And I've had wonderful opportunities to advocate for other victims and survivors. And I've had, I've had lots of opportunities to witness and to assist. Yeah. And this collection of poetry in particular does not necessarily reflect that overtly. Right. It doesn't. But many of these poems were written during a time when I was emerging from that element of darkness that was so difficult. And they were part of what were pulling me out.
Yes.
So, in fact, can I just read one right now?
Yes, let's do it.
One of my favorites that was so grounding is on page 68, and it's called Missing God. And this came about, this poem was written, it was, oh my gosh, this might be 20 years old.
Wow.
But it came to me in the mountains, and that's evident in the poem. It's a very quick, short poem. And one of the difficulties I had in, and this surprises me, Katrina, I didn't expect to spend so much time on this aspect of my life.
That's okay. But, we follow our heart, right, Melody?
One of the things that happened was because my abuse was largely by my father and male authority figures, my relationship with God as a male figure was damaged significantly.
Yes.
And so when I began to allow God to be something different than that, specifically a feminine form.
Yes.
It gave me a new sense of myself. It gave me a sense of power and the idea that what Western culture and my Christian religion calls God doesn't have to be an old white man with a beard, you know? Mm-hmm. So this poem, it was inspired by another woman who was kind of a pioneer in the idea in my religious culture of God as a woman instead of a man. Why does God have to be a man?
Yeah.
No, who said God has to be a man? So it's called Missing God, and I'll just read it. I don't remember her voice. But sometimes in the mountains, I think I hear an echo of the flute she played.
Yeah.
And I was in the mountains. And it was actually this, oh, there's something else. And it's something I need.
Totally.
And it's just, even reading the poem, I can be right back there at the foot of this waterfall. Like, oh, okay. I'm going to be okay.
Yeah, there's something about the identity of God, this idea that God doesn't have to be just a man, this idea that we can have heavenly parents that are actually God and this feminine divine. How can we become our best selves if we don't have an example, right? How do we become the mothers and the women we want to be if all we're looking towards is something that we can never be? It's just something. I mean, I know that science will continue to evolve and help people in their desires, but I will truly never be like my Heavenly Father. I won't. It's not a possibility. Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's not part of my spiritual or physical DNA. It just can't. So that was really powerful when I read that poem. Yeah, the flute got to me a lot too, because I think that a lot of times we can't hear unless we're in a place that we feel safe to hear. And I love that you could hear her in the mountains, that you could hear her song. I heard recently somebody was talking about Oedipus and about the sirens. And I can't remember, I was listening to an interview, and the gentleman said that, he says, why do you think that Oedipus and his men were able to get past the sirens? He said, it's because they were listening to a sweeter song. And I think that a lot of times we feel so oppressed by the things that are happening in this hard journey. And the only way for comfort is to truly listen to a sweeter song. And not everyone's song is different, but I think for you, Melody, you needed to hear her. And I'm the same way. I need to hear that sweeter song from my mother, you know? And I think that it's very powerful.
It is really powerful. And it's really, and I even try to go beyond the idea of, I love, so my frame, the way I have created God for myself, is I really do model it on what I see in front of me, which is a family. Now, this creates problems for non-binary folks, and I completely surrender the idea that what I have created in my mind that makes me happy, a family unit where there is a father and a mother in heaven, and the whole of humanity is a big family. I love that. It makes me feel happy. It makes me feel good. I have friends and acquaintances who have a God who is much more fluid, but the idea is they incorporate qualities that we traditionally think of as masculine and feminine.
Right.
And that God can be that for us. Totally. And when you're raised in an environment that's, anyway, like we said, that says God is a man, it is very limiting for many women. Some women are fine with it. For me, it was, I can't have an angry God. I can't have a God who punishes. I need a God who lets me just come sit in her lap and say, this is how my day was. And so for me at that time, I really exclusively, once this thought came to me, I exclusively, for a period of time, I exclusively envisioned God as a woman.
Yeah.
And if there was a male God, I didn't really care, because I needed her.
You needed her. Absolutely.
And it has come back around to, because I'm Christian, I believe in a father and a mother, and I believe in a son who actually his strongest attributes are what we in this world might call feminine, who embodies the qualities of femininity with such force and such power that his gender to me doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I found so much comfort in that thought as well. And for me, I think about one of the reasons why he can understand us as women is because he performed the atonement. His atonement gave him a perspective into the female soul that nobody else understands. Nobody understands but him, because he's been the only one that has truly born all the trauma and the hurt and, you know, the pain. He's the only one that can do that. And so for me, that's really helped, because even if God is this male and female unit, they still can't possibly understand the way that Christ can, right? Because of his atonement. I don't know. There's just so many things to think about, but I agree. I agree that he does have the strongest, he does have those female and male strengths that an understanding that we absolutely need. So
I don't know where this poem is, but I wrote a poem about Christ as an emissary coming to this incarnation in order to take on the burdens of mortality, and that his mother spent a fair amount of time helping him prepare for his experience of sharing the burdens of womanhood.
Yes.
That she was actually his source for strength and courage, because bearing the traumas and the difficulties that women experience in this life. This is not to diminish the fact that men get raped, right, or that men are victimized in various ways, but no man has ever died in childbirth.
Right.
So anyway, that's just another element that she's an important part of why and how he can understand the traditionally female experience. Anyway, okay.
Oh, so good. So good. I'm loving this. I'm tempted to ask you, do you want to talk a little bit about why you called your collection An Imperfect Roundness?
Oh, yes.
That ties into everything we're talking about too.
Yeah. So, and the other thing that I love, so let me just say quickly, this collection is some of the poems, many of the poems are autobiographical, some are not. And it takes a course of a timeline through life, basically. It starts out with poems about beginnings and birth, and ends with poems more toward the end of life, some dealing with death. And it's primarily about a woman's experience in life. And the fun thing about this title is that, how long ago was it? So I had the bulk of the collection maybe 2.5 years ago is when I really finally had the emotional space to start gathering poems together. And I just picked out some of my favorites. That's how I did it. And poems that had either won awards in contests, or I had people give me feedback and say, this is a really good poem. Or as a writer, I can see this is a good poem, this is publishable, etc. So I had gathered these poems together, and I knew, you know, it wasn't complete. And one morning I was outside, and the sky was particularly beautiful. And as I looked west, I was on the street in front of my home, I saw the moon in the sky. And it was a morning moon, you know, it hadn't faded yet. And it had a very particular shape. It wasn't quite full. And I don't know if it was waxing or waning, but it wasn't quite full. It was kind of semi-elliptical, but almost full. And I thought, this shape is so familiar to me. It's so familiar. What is the shape I'm seeing in the sky right now? It's something that's not the moon. What is it? And it just hit me. That is the shape of a woman's womb when she's very pregnant. And you know, the baby never sits perfectly symmetrically in the womb. They're always kind of, you know, leaning on one side or off to one side. And so when, at least for me, when I would stand in front of a mirror naked and I had this big belly, it was always just kind of a little bit, not quite right. Not quite round. Under clothing, you know, looks fabulous. Look at your basketball, your baby bump. Everything's great. But when you really look in the mirror, it is often asymmetrical. So it was like the moon and my belly. And that's where the poem came from. Would you like me to read that poem?
Yes, let's read that poem.
Okay. And the title is An Imperfect Roundness. And it just felt like the right title for the book when this poem came to me. An Imperfect Roundness. This morning, a lopsided moon hangs low in the sky, heavy with a new day, like my belly, a moon full of baby, an imperfect roundness heavy with hope. And what I love about this poem, I'll just tell you, is it pulled together the present right there in that moon and the very distant past.
Yeah.
When I was a young mother. And it just felt like the right way to name the collection, which also kind of covers this lifetime thus far.
Oh, it does. And for me, I mean, there's so many things. Just a funny thing about my family likes to say pregnant idea, you know.
Yes.
We giggle about that and we think it's so funny. But I think that also I love how you talk about that heaviness of hope. And what I love about this poem and this whole collection is that I think about the things that, you know, the gifts that I've received from reading your poetry, but then also that this is just the beginning. And this is a pregnant collection that is full of hope. And it's full of hope for those of us that read it. It's full of hope for those of us that'll continue to read your work. And so there's a lot of symbolism for me within this this first poem that you actually chose to be the title. And I think it's perfect. And we've had some beautiful conversations about the meaning of the moon and how it represents, you know, a lot of people culturally believe that it does represent our feminine mother. And I think that that's a beautiful way to also introduce these thoughts through your journey as a woman, as a daughter and a mother. And it's really beautiful. Oh, so good. Why don't we pick another one? Let's pick another one. I personally felt like I did get a glimpse into you, into your life as a young woman, a mother, a wife, and a daughter. And so many of these poems just simply spoke straight to my heart. And I know that the next time I read them, I'll find new ones that speak to me and that I need to hear at that time. As a visual artist, I really enjoyed the poems that were also very visually as well as figuratively descriptive and unique. And so when our listeners receive their copy, they'll notice that quite a few of them have this visual, this visual uniqueness. Let's read one of, which one did the circle one you wanted to read? Yeah. The journal.
Sure. And these poems are called concrete poems, or sometimes they're called shape poems, where there's a representation of the poem itself in the way it is actually printed on the page. So I'm just going to hold up this poem so people that might watch this can see what's being read. So
and
this,
I can even hold mine while you read it. Do you want me to?
Okay, yeah. Technology.
Easier.
Sometimes because some people like to see what they're reading. Beautiful. So this is called One Eternal Round. Seasons change themselves, and me. And if you'll just hold it up for a minute,
yeah,
then people can read the surrounding narration as well. So something interesting about this, Katrina, that would interest you too because of your visual art. There are several poems in this book that in my mind I actually see as three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. And this is one of them. I see this as a, if I were a big go-getter with art and wanted to create it, I might. And who knows, I still have a lot of years left. I might do this with some of these poems. So I see this poem as a mobile.
Yeah.
With the central words hanging from a string, and they can move all they want. And then the words on the outside, I actually have another set of words that would be their own ring that could rotate around the central words in two directions. So
that's beautiful. Yeah.
And there's another poem in the book called Divine Origins, and it's in the shape of a rectangle or a door. And there is a version of this that looks like a double helix. So it's a DNA strand, but it's three-dimensional, and I can't do that on the page. Poetry, there's a lot of wonderful experimental poetry going on that people are doing fabulous things with. And at some point I may be able to do this with some of these poems, but.
Ooh, I need to see you do that. That's amazing. Should we do Rain Is What Matters? Because that one also has another visual, what did you call it? A concrete poetry. Yeah, concrete. I'm going to hold that one up too so they can see the shape.
So it's in the shape of a raindrop. And this one, the other thing about poetry to remember is that some poems can be written to be read. And the words themselves, the message in the poem is powerful. It doesn't need any special formatting and can be read. Other poems are written to be auditory. There's a whole field of poetry, of course, spoken word poetry, a whole genre that is written to be spoken aloud. And this poem, I loved the shape when I made it into a raindrop, but it's also meant to be read aloud because I'll show you as I read it. I'm going to pause for just 1 second.
Yeah, you're fine.
I don't know if you can hear the street cleaner going by outside, but I wanted to be sure that wasn't getting in the way. Okay, and the title of the poem is Rain Is What Matters. Gentle, peaceful, clean, cool, clarity falling singly, distilled through time and space. Water spilled whispers out of heaven, gifts given freely without constraint, devoid of cost. Blessings sprinkled, bestowed in transparent spheres. Multitudes of sometimes silent small things, drop by drop, anointing tiny by tiny, telling truth.
Wow, the cadence. I would not have caught the cadence if you hadn't have read it aloud. I think that for me, lately, I've been thinking about rain being this soft and gentle, like at the beginning of, you know, the poem, she has in parentheses, as dew from heaven. It's one of my favorite scriptures. Personally, I love thinking about that idea that it's coming from heaven, but I love your cadence. And I needed to hear you do it because I definitely read it too slow.
Well, the idea was it's a rainstorm.
Yeah.
It's a brief little storm on the page. And the sounds of the poem with a lot of ka-ka and ta-ta and s-s is meant to evoke drips of water. And this one, I actually wrote, I had a dear friend who was also a massage therapist. And during my healing from childhood traumas, it was very important to me to connect and heal the things that had been kind of kept in my body. And so she would do massage for me. And I would often spend time in her hot tub out on an open deck area. And one evening, I was sitting in the hot tub and this rain started falling very gently. Yeah. And there is a concept about truth coming from heaven in small increments that allow us to take it in and to experience it and incorporate it into our lives, truth or enlightenment. And I felt it physically as I was sitting there in water and then feeling these tiny drops of water falling on me. It was just clear to me that these large and important explosive type experience and events, you know, they impact us. But for me, what impacts me more significantly, and I think for most of us, is tiny, tiny little events over time that help form our understanding and connect us to important truths for ourselves. So, and that's where power comes from.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Over time.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think that that's what's made a big difference for me in my life. And I think that's why it took me so long. Like when I was asking you about your trauma, like I loved how you talked about how it was the endurance, enduring, and then emerging and witnessing and the rain. I think that's the reason why we can do those things, is because we need to allow it to come gradually, all that truth to come into our lives and help us. So, yeah.
Oh, let me share another poem I didn't write, but it's been a great comfort to me and a great reassurance about dealing with hard things. Mm-hmm. That it's not something any of us can do quickly, as much as we wish it could happen that way. Mm-hmm. That the hardest things we have to work through will not be resolved quickly.
Yes.
And there's a reason for that. It's because we can't survive rapid transformation.
Totally.
Transformation takes time. And so Emily Dickinson wrote a wonderful poem. And, you know, most of her poems, I think, are untitled. But this is how it goes. Tell all the truth, but tell it slant. Success in circuit lies. Too bright. Let's see. Hang on. If I weren't reciting it to you, I could do it quickly. Okay. Tell all the truth, but tell it slant. Success in circuit lies. Too bright for our infirm delight. The truth's superb surprise. As lightning to the children eased with explanation kind, the truth, the truth must dazzle gradually, or every man be blind.
Ooh, yeah, totally. Oh, that's beautiful. Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Really, yeah. Really powerful. Goodness, there's so many good pieces in here. Did we do all the ones that you wanted to share? We didn't do the God is the Farmer's Wife. Do you want to do that one?
Why don't we just wrap up with that one, or whatever you want to wrap up?
Let's wrap up with the God is the Farmer's Wife, because we wanted to do one long one.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just do that one.
I should say a piece of feedback that I've received from several people, is that one of the things they love about this collection is, and it makes me so happy because it's exactly what I had hoped would happen, they can pick it up and just read one poem. So number one, many of these poems are very accessible. They're not complicated, at least on the surface. Even though they're short poems, some of them go quite deep. It's like a deep dive that makes just a little splash on the page. And if you pay attention, it has a lot of meaning beneath the surface. But they're very accessible. And so you can open it and read one poem, and it can serve as kind of a meditation. And it's easy to just read and think about for a minute. And then the collection as a whole is also really enjoyable. And I've been so happy that I've had several people say those very words to me. Like, I'm carrying the book around in my purse, and I just pull it out and read one poem, and the poem itself stands alone beautifully. And the best compliment was, this came, one of these people was a very good poet herself that said this, and it was completely unsolicited. And So that's one of the great things about this book. Some of them are short enough. For those who aren't normally drawn to poetry, this is a very friendly introduction to poetry. If you're someone who hasn't ever bought a book of poetry, this is a very nice place to start. So, and this poem was a more recently written poem, and it's called God is a Farmer's Wife. She's been awake since 5 because it's her nature, and breakfast will be ready when you come. She knows every recipe by heart. She knows the sound of your feet moving down the hall toward the kitchen across those few creaky boards. Knows your sister and brother's sound too, because every footfall bears witness of its own. She is warm and round and strong, and when she speaks, the sun begins to rise. She wakes it for you. Yesterday, she plowed fields and fed horses in the middle of the day while you slept because you were tired. When the time comes to dream yourself away from this place, she won't forget the sound of your feet, your quiet breathing. When you go, she'll bless your skin to remember the warm, round sun, your mind to recall the smell of earth, even if you forget the plow, even if the ground is too hard. She wants you to go. Find your way, to learn the way horses whinny, each in their own voice. You'll breathe their sweet aroma up close, no two alike. She knows them like she knows you. And she knows the ground they cover when they run, every steep, every valley. She hears them when she sleeps. She hears the grain as it grows to feed them, the music it makes, brushing the palms of your hands when you pass through, before or after quail who run unseen below. And your hips. She knows how the grain flicks against them like a horse's tail. She wants you to listen for her in whinny and hoof, in tail swish and quail scurry, to taste the song the chick would have sung if it hadn't been made into scrambled eggs for your breakfast. She wants you to remember her soft apron, how the colors stay bright, even after infinite wearings in the kitchen or at the plow. She won't miss you when you're gone, because you are never gone. The floor still squeaks where your feet found their hold in the morning, your feet when they were soft and barely awake.
Oh, yeah. You said this was one of your most recent.
Yes. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yes. And I can't even remember where it came from, to be honest with you. It just kind of came out of the blue. And the place where it's situated, where the subjects are situated, is because I have this belief in a realm that exists simultaneously around us and within us of potentially unseen ancestors and angels. It's a conversation, it's an idea about that other realm where there's still earth, there's a kind of earth, there's some kind of soil, and leaving, we're going to another place. Anyway, it's an exchange between the world of spirit and the world of flesh, and it doesn't always explain where are you when.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like there's a connection all the time that we're just unaware of. It's all around us. Mm-hmm. And I just also love the image of a powerful woman who incorporates physical power and organizational power and is also very traditionally maternal.
Yeah.
Who fixes your breakfast for That's you. Right. Who wouldn't love
to... Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It made my mind wander to so many different things about just motherhood and what is it really like to be God, and yeah, all the people that are here that we don't necessarily see, but we feel them, and that they're not really gone, and that they have roles to play and missions to fulfill, even though we can't communicate with them in the same way. So yeah. And yet here she is, like you say, organizing all those things and watching over all her children. So yeah, it's really beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing and reading to us. That was such a treat. We haven't had that here on the podcast. And I think that it's something that will truly be a treasure for so many of us to go back and listen. And I totally encourage everyone to go get your book and then come listen again so that you can actually have Melody read to you, because it was such a treat to have you do that and to share some of these things. One of the things that I love about poetry is your own interpretation, but there's nothing quite like getting the interpretation and the thoughts and feelings from the poet herself. So thank you for sharing all that with us today. I am curious, congratulations. This is your first full-length manuscript. And even though you've published many places and had awards, this is a big deal. So I don't know, I'm curious, like what surprised you most about the process of publishing, and what projects are you going to be working on? Obviously, so many of us want to see the mobile poem. We want to see these poems actually come to life physically. I would love to see that. So yeah, anything you want to share about those things?
Oh, just a quick aside here. I forgot to mention, I've also done collaborative art exhibits with one visual artist in particular. And this was in many years past. One was in the Salt Lake Arts Center, and another one was part of a small gallery project around the 2002 Olympics, where she painted in response to my poems. And there's a type of poetry called ekphrastic poetry, where the poet writes in response to a work of art. Yeah. And so there's kind of a fun, I see more of that in my future as far as writing. I love the idea of collaborations between types of artists. Yeah. So I'm thinking about that. I do, interestingly, okay, so your question was what surprised me about the publishing process. Number one, again, speaks to the idea that the universe is right now conspiring to bring everyone what they want and need. And I believe everyone will eventually get what they want and need. And even those among us who are the most oppressed and the most underserved and underseen, I think the universe is working to bring each of us what we need. And the press, the small, very, very small press that published this book didn't even exist 3 or 4 years ago.
Crazy.
So what surprised me was I had submitted this book. I had entered it in a couple of, this manuscript in a couple of contests, which is one way to get published, is you enter a manuscript in a contest and the winning manuscript actually gets published by the press. And it was not selected from the places that I submitted it, which is not unusual in writing. You have to submit dozens, if not hundreds of times to get things published often. So when I had thought about this small press that I even knew some of the players within the press, I decided this is where I should just go. This is where I should go. And part of what surprised me was I had kind of resisted it because this press it has a certain audience, and I didn't want to necessarily limit the audience, because even though there are themes in the book that are spiritual and or religious, I think, you know, I have an atheist friend who talked about many of the poems she really loved. And so I think it can appeal to a much broader audience. But the two things that surprised me, one was it took a tremendous amount of courage to actually publish. And as you know, as an artist, putting your work out to the public is scary at times. I think we get used to it once we've done it for a while. But it is scary because some people aren't going to like it. And I made up a list in my mind, a critique as a poet, how I might critique my own writing. And I came up with several ways that I could critique it negatively and just kind of prepared myself for that.
Yeah.
And so far I have not had any of those come back to me from readers, which I'm grateful for. So I was very surprised that the number one, the process went fairly smoothly. And number two, the response has been really largely positive, which was a great relief. And I'm still prepared. If there's some kind of negative response, I'm prepared for that. And I'm okay with it because art speaks to its own people. Something yes. that you might not speak to me and vice versa. But it was a wonderful thing to see it come into being. The other thing that happened was I thought, I just need one book in print. I want to be immortalized in print, you know? Mostly for my children, grandchildren, and people who will come long after. I just wanted my words in a hard copy that could be held. And I did consider self-publishing, but there's a little bit of it. It's better to go through a press just for reasons I don't want to get into. And what surprised me was once this was finished, like you alluded to, I thought, I have more in me. So I have a goal that I won't say aloud, but I have a goal for another manuscript in a certain time period. And that's going to hopefully help me work toward another manuscript. And I have some other projects artistically in mind too. I did a series for 2 years on Facebook just for myself as a writing prompt. I did something called Tiny Poem Tuesday. And every Tuesday for 2 years, I tried to craft a poem with as few words because social media is very fleeting and people don't want to spend time there. I wanted to craft poems with as few words as possible, but really good poetry, you know?
Yeah.
And so I have a whole collection of those that I'm going to compress into 52 poems. And I have a friend who makes books. And so it'll be a handcrafted limited edition collection. So that's one of the things.
Wow. Oh, that's so exciting. I can't wait to see that happen. That'll be so great. Yeah, that'll be great. Oh, I'm excited. Okay, so tell our listeners where they can purchase your book right now and how they can stay connected with you. Like, do you, your website or email list, anything?
My website is brand new. So basically has my bio and a link to Amazon where you can buy the book. You can buy the book on Amazon. If people wanted a signed copy, I still have some author copies at home. And if someone was particularly interested in that, they can certainly email me. My website right now does not have my email connected to it quite yet, but that'll be coming. And more things will be coming on the website. Events like writing retreats and things like that. But you're welcome to email me. So first I should say my website is melodynui.com.
Perfect.
And my Instagram account is Mama Nui. And then I have an Instagram account purely for short poems.
Oh, cool.
That is under a pseudonym. And used some of my Tiny Poem Tuesday poems, and it's a little fallow right now. It's sitting there for a while until I'm ready to get back to it. But it's called Agnes Wrote.
Okay.
Agnes underscore wrote. And email if you did want to have a signed copy, if that was something that was important to someone, they can certainly email me at melody.new@gmail.com.
Perfect. I will link to all those things in the show notes and we'll go ahead and link to your book on Amazon. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing so just your beautiful words, your beautiful heart, and just for lifting everyone. I personally just felt just so comforted throughout this whole interview. And, you know, sometimes we're sharing hard things, but there's a beautiful spirit to the things that you shared today. So thank you so much for being willing to share those things today and for reading to us. That was such a gift. So you're so loved, Melody.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for doing this as part of your gift too.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially. Yeah. right now. We need things that are hopeful.
We totally need hope right now. Thank you for being a part of that. All right, well, I just want to say thank you, and Melody and I are sending so much love to each of you today, and from Salt Lake and Midway, soon to be neighbors. We just want to say have a wonderful day and lots of love from Melody and I.
Thank you. Meditative time.
Yes.
And it's a nice break between what you're leaving and what you're going to, you know, leaving home and
big transition.
Going to work. Yes. And so I quite liked it. I quite liked Frontrunner. In fact, I would be on that platform at 6:30 in the morning and would watch the colors change in the sky as the sun is coming up. You know, in the winter, it's still dark. And then there are places along that route that look like a Maynard Dixon painting, you know, that are just gorgeous, and the seasons change, and you get to watch the way the landscape changes with the seasons. And then I thought, how can I use this time? Because one of the things I was trying to make time for in my life was writing. Yeah. And so I started a little project where I would just do, so I was thinking about, you know, Humans of New York, and I thought about how can I paint a picture? How can I not do a photograph and paint a picture of what I'm observing on the train? And so I did People of Frontrunner for, it was probably close to 2 years, maybe a year and a half.
Wow.
And just had a little page on Facebook. And every day I would just find a subject and write about that person. And I would do it in real time so that by the time I got off the train, I would post it to Facebook. So it has timestamps for when, you know, the dates and the times, and that's actually one of my dream projects is I want to make a short film. I want to get, you know, make a short film with a narrative of those observations and images from the train.
But amazing. Oh, so I need to go on your Facebook because they're probably still all on there, right?
They're on a separate site called People of Frontrunner.
Oh, cool.